Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Our relationship with the other animals that inhabit this planet is a strange one, to say the least. We can love a dog like they are a fully fledged member of the family, but we barely bat an eyelid at the idea of putting a chicken in a cage and then eating it. Has it always been thus, and how did we get here? Richard Gerling is the author of The Longest Story, How Humans Have Loved, Hated and Misunderstood Other Species, and he joins us now. How are you, Richard?
I'm fine, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. I'm afraid I'm in the same boat as most people. I will spend time greeting my dog, walking him, and indeed also talking to him, and then I will happily tuck into lamb chops or whatever else is put in front of me.
Yep. Well, let me give you a bit of background about how this book came about. I mean, it's a bit of a long story in its own right. I mean, I'm by trade, I'm an environmental journalist, and I've been writing about environmental issues for upwards of 40 years, and I'd often remarked on the illogicality of our attitudes to other species for, you know, some of the same reasons that you've just outlined, but particularly about anthropomorphism, which is our habit of treating animals according to the human vices and virtues that we project onto them, but which have nothing whatsoever to do with their own true natures. We love the dog, as you say, but treat other equally sentient creatures as industrial products. Now, after many centuries of saying the opposite, science is now telling us that there is no aspect of innate human behavior that is not reflected in other species. Things like sympathy, empathy, motherly love, dispute resolution, forward planning, family loyalty, tool-making, grief, loyalty, all these things that we claim for ourselves have emerged from the same evolutionary journey that we've shared with others. And yet, we continue to persecute them in ways which, if we did them to other people, would be called crimes against humanity. We can't even agree which animals are fit to eat. Some societies won't eat pork, some won't eat beef, only a few will eat dog. In Britain, people eat cows, lambs and pigs without a qualm, but would sooner roast their grandmother than eat a horse. Other people stop eating red meat for ethical reasons, but continue to eat chicken, which is the most abused and deprived species of them all, but is treated as some kind of honorary vegetable. And as you said, our attitude to pets are equally strange. We mistake childlike pampering for kindness and understanding. We keep birds in cages, rabbits in hutches, and treat mice as pets or vermin according to circumstance, which made me think all these things, all these prejudices and confusions are the end of a story, and stories have beginnings and middles as well as ends. So I thought, why not go back to the very beginning and trace the story across all the millennia since we stopped being apes ourselves?
Right.
It's about the cumulative influence of hunters, priests, artists, writers, soldiers, philosophers, farmers, environmental activists and scientists, hence The Longest Story.
Right. I have to say, as you're saying, talking about animals being sentient and having feelings, I'm squirming a bit, because I think a lot of the times you suspect that, but you close your mind to it. It's the only way you can enjoy your dinner, basically.
Well, it has a very long story, but yeah. all the way back to, you know, the earliest civilizations. It was never imagined that animals were capable of feeling, and you know, in the Middle Ages, it was Christian orthodoxy. I mean, the Christian Church cemented the belief that animals were given by God for the use of man, and that man had no responsibility for their welfare. It cited scriptural authority for that.
Right.
And, you know, those who said otherwise were burned at the stake, including many, many old ladies who were guilty of nothing more than loving their cats.
My word. How fantastically convenient for us.
He kind of stood, I mean, that religious belief stood to reason. You know, a benevolent God would not permit any sentient being to suffer. therefore it followed that, you know, in his kindness, he'd not endowed animals with any feeling.
Oh, God. I was going to mention, I've sometimes heard programs on ancient civilizations, and that they had a more understanding feeling towards their animals, felt they were more gifts to us, and were very respectful of them.
Well, they had their own kind of muddle. Animals clearly were there from the very beginning, and the earliest cultural artifacts were cave paintings of animals. And the earliest known figurative sculpture is of a man with the head of a lion. The best guess is that direct physical relationships did all begin through anthropomorphism. You know, one day a prehistoric hunter-gatherer, a man or a woman or a child, finds an orphaned wolf cub whose big, frightened eyes remind them of a baby. So they pick it up, take it home, and there it adapts to human life, respects the hierarchy of its new pack, faithfully follows its master.
Yeah.
And over time evolves into the domestic dog. And, you know, from that, you know, this gives us an idea. If we contain one species, then, you know, why not more? Instead of hunting for meat, why not make it easier for ourselves by rounding up the animals and keeping them alive until they're needed?
Right.
So we get sheep, goats, pigs, cattle, horses, so that from the very beginning, all the same species that are still farmed today. Then, you know, even better still, we find that oxen and horses are good for work as well as for meat, and the whole world changes. Owners of land come together to form settlements come together to form nations and empires. Hierarchies emerge. People with many animals are rich, those with few are poor.
Right.
And, you know, so history continues.
Right.
In the Egyptian empire, animals were elevated as gods, even as they were being driven from their habitats by human settlements. And, you know, worshipping an animal didn't mean you couldn't also eat it.
Right.
You know, a cow could be the goddess of love and beauty, but it could just as well be dinner.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, anyone who touched a pig had to throw himself into the river with all his clothes on.
Right.
And killing a cat was a capital offence. When a cat died in the household, everyone had to shave off their eyebrows to signify mourning, and the corpse was embalmed like a pharaoh.
It sounds like something from Monty Python.
It is a bit.
Encouraging cat owners to shave off their eyebrows if such a thing happens. As we've developed, it seems, as we've developed as a society, it just gets worse and worse for animals. But it has been debated. There have been voices in the wilderness saying, don't do this, haven't there?
Oh, yes. Since the 17th century. I mean, the loudest voice in the 17th century was the French philosopher René Descartes, who was still following the sort of orthodox Christian line, forcefully arguing that animals had no conscious awareness, hence no sensations or feelings, so that men like himself could go on cutting up live animals, safe in the knowledge that they're screaming and shrieking, with the mindless reactions of machines as senseless as clocks. But, you know, there was at least some realization that a well-cared-for animal would last longer and give better economic value than a neglected or abused one. In 1635, for example, the Irish Parliament made it illegal to attach a horse to a plough by its tail or to pluck wool from a living sheep.
Oh, we were always forward thinkers in this country. As it goes on, there are examples that are jaw-dropping, aren't they, in terms of how we view animals and how we can love some. And you mentioned one in the book. When Hitler came to power, he was opening concentration camps for humans, at the same time enacting laws prohibiting cruelty to animals.
Yes. I mean, the Nazi animal protection laws were the most advanced in the world, and remain so for a long time. It's absolutely extraordinary. And it's, you know, there's a long-standing argument, you know, begun by Pythagoras, which says that, you know, people who ill-treat animals are more likely to ill-treat humans. And, you know, Hitler was the sort of living antithesis of that.
Absolutely. As we move on, as our population increases, obviously that puts even more pressure on the animal population and their habitats. So I'm just wondering, is there any good news? Are we learning anything from this? Are we starting to make, you know, some progress anywhere?
Well, you know, there's an increasing awareness, particularly since COVID, that human and animal lives are inextricably intertwined, and that you can't have a healthy human environment without a healthy ecosystem. But it's like global warming. Words there are in plenty. Effective action, not so much.
Richard, I was going to say we'd leave them on a bright note. I think we've actually managed to do the opposite. But
I'm so sorry.
Thank you very much for joining me, Richard.
Well, thank you.
Richard Gerland, the author of The Longest Story, How Humans Have Loved, Hated and Misunderstood Other Species.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.